This is Jesus Garcia. You're listening to Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys, let's jump into the film review. I'm really excited to talk about this one. This is week number two of Mike's theme, sequel month, and I'll let him announce his pick. Mike, go ahead and announce your pick, brother.
Yeah, I went with M. Night Shyamalan's Shalamanama Ding Dong's pick, our movie, Split, the sequel to, which at the time I wasn't sure until the very end, which if you've never seen the movie, why are you listening to this? But if you've never seen the movie, spoiler, it's a sequel to the film Unbreakable. Another movie that eventually I will pick that I love. I really, really like this movie, man. There is a lot of good here. To me, this is the good M. Night. You know, he went through a stretch that I don't think he was quite batting 1,000, to be polite. And I think here he gets back to some of the basics. I think it's a really good story. It's a very interesting, different way to tell a story, at least in my opinion. You know, we're really using the psychology field as a plot line, plus adding in actual traditional horror elements, I thought made for a really interesting story with a lot of twists and turns, and I think it's really good. So that's the reason I picked it, is because I was looking for a unique sequel, something we haven't done. We haven't done M. Night in a little while, and I thought it was kind of time to get back there. So I'm excited to talk about it.
I remember the hype for this movie when it came out. I remember tweeting back in the day, you know, I was just asking everybody, I was like, is it, I don't care now, but I was like, is it weird to go to the movies by yourself? Because I wanted to go see this, but I didn't have anybody to go with me. And everybody who replied was like, nah, it's cool, man. I love going to the movies by myself. So like, okay, cool. So I saw it in theaters, and I thought, you know, I just thought it was okay, because I hadn't seen the prequel Unbreakable to this. Still haven't, disclaimer. So maybe that's why I don't dislike this movie, but I don't love it either. I just think you get really good acting from James. Anya Taylor-Joy is fantastic as well. But I don't know. It just doesn't thrill me. Like, it's okay to me. But maybe if I see Unbreakable and its sequel to this, Glass as well, maybe I'll appreciate it a little more.
Need to see Glass.
Yeah, Glass.
Okay.
You don't need to see Glass.
Take the GL off. Yeah, take the GL off.
That's strong coming from someone who's a completionist.
Yeah.
But back to Split, I just think it's okay, but I'm not going to discredit how good James McAvoy is in this. He's fantastic. And I think Anya Taylor-Joy, I've never seen her give a bad performance. So I just think it's middle of the road, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change your opinion if you see Unbreakable. Like, I love Unbreakable, but I don't think that would, because this is a very standalone film. So I really don't think there's no connection really besides that very, very end scene. So as far as my opinion on this, first of all, Netflix coming in clutch this week with Walking Dead and Split. Shout out to the flicks.
Hold up. Split is on Netflix?
Well, yeah, I watched it on Netflix.
Damn it. I didn't see it. I've rented it. Son of a bitch.
M. Night appreciates it, man. But I'm a big M. Night fan, like I've said before, and I loved Unbreakable. Besides Signs, Unbreakable is probably my second favorite of his movies. Now, I'm pretty sure I already knew that this was a sequel to Unbreakable going in because I was already excited for this. So I was doing some investigation, and I didn't go see it opening weekend. So being the normal interwebs and all, I had it spoiled. But it didn't change anything for me. In fact, I liked it more knowing that. But I do remember the first time I saw this, it really made me feel uncomfortable. Like something about the dad and me with these girls and this whole thing. I mean, it really unnerves me. It makes me feel uncomfortable, like I said, and really bothers me a lot. Obviously, you mentioned it. McAvoy's performance is one of the best I've ever seen on screen. Like it doesn't work without him and this performance, and he killed it. You know, I'm kind of wondering why Professor Xavier wasn't one of his personalities. I'm sure Mike and Nico were wondering the same thing, honestly. But yeah, would I say I loved this movie? No, because it affects me to watch it. So I don't love watching it. It's like some demonic movies. I don't love sitting there watching the movie, but is it a great fucking movie? I absolutely think so.
So I saw this movie in 2016. Or maybe it was 2017. Like it was when it first released on Blu-ray DVD. I used to hang out with my neighbors a lot, and we would rent movies from Redbox. So that's how I saw this movie. And fun fact, I didn't know it was a sequel until at the end. And even then, I hadn't seen Unbreakable. Like I'd seen parts of it, and so I understood the reference because I was familiar with Bruce Willis's character there. But I hadn't finished the movie. And funny, Nico, when you said coming from completionist, that's strong. No, definitely watch it, but you don't have to. Like, it's not good. Brian, like you said, this is one of my, well, you said with Unbreakable, but this is one of my favorite M. Night movies as well. When he's good, he's good. Like you said, Mike, Signs, one of my favorites. Actually, is my favorite movie from him. But, you know, he's got some mid in there, too. I thought Knock at the Cabin was eh.
Old is
Knock at the Cabin was,
I liked
eh.
Old. I liked Old.
But this one's really good. And McAvoy's performance was incredible. I texted you guys when I was watching it, doing this scene by scene. I was like, man, I would love to have McAvoy on the show just because he's phenomenal in general, but specifically to ask him what his mindset had to be like to get into so many different characters for one movie. It's brilliant.
Just fucking brilliant, man. I mean, he's phenomenal on screen here. It's unreal. I mean, I know like Eddie Murphy has done movies where he plays like 10 different characters, but this is way different to interchange in and out of them so quickly. And look, the magic of editing have made it even stronger, but like, you're right, Dustin. Like, I'd really love to ask him the mental place he had to get to be able to do it.
Yeah. And, I also want to say on air, I don't understand how you guys picked the Beast to beat the Devil in our little bracket tournament because, yeah, the Beast is impressive, but dude, it's the fucking Devil. Last thing I'll say is that this is the first show we've recorded since I've gotten our podcast immortalized in the ink on my flesh. So I really need the support to continue. Because if we cancel this show now, I'm gonna look like an idiot. So, thank you.
Since everyone else threw their hat in on their favorite M. Night, mine is still Sixth Sense. It just never gonna be top for me. But I mean, M. Night is so hit and miss, man. This movie's great. I like Unbreakable a lot, but he's a very odd director, in my opinion, or filmmaker, in my opinion, because he has some stinkers in there, man. I don't like The Mist. The Village is okay. I thought Knock at the Cabin was fine. But like,
Dave Bautista
really
crushed it, but the rest of the movie was him.
Yeah, yeah. And so I thought, hey, man, yeah, he's great for sure. But yeah.
Wait, what do you mean The Mist? I thought Frank Darabont.
Sorry, my bad.
The Happening?
I like The Happening. I'm the only person in the world that likes The Happening.
Well, before we get started, I'll just throw my favorite M. Night out there. I probably haven't seen as many as you guys.
But I can't really think of any that I really dislike or think are terrible. But The Visit is still my favorite.
Oh, I love great. Yeah,
The Sixth Sense was fantastic. Makes me choke up at the end every time. The one that I want to pick in the future for sure. I'm sure you guys have on your list as well is The Village. That movie, yeah. I like The Village. I had a good time with it. It's a little slow, but that end twist, man, I was like,
it's just a slow. That's the only reason. Like, it's still great. By the way, I did mean The Happening, which is also ruined by the internet using The Fappening. So go ahead.
All right, guys. If you guys don't have any more opening thoughts, I will try to get through this lengthy scene by scene. There's a lot of words in this, so bear with me. The movie opens with an ominous score, and we see a young Anya Taylor-Joy sitting at the table at a restaurant, zoned out to what's going on around her. We then hear Claire say it was a mercy invitation. She couldn't invite everyone from her art class and exclude one person. We hear that Casey has some behavioral issues, and Claire's dad offered to take Casey home since her parents' car is a lemon. The girls wait in the car as Claire's dad loads the trunk, and then we hear footsteps approaching, and then Claire's dad asks the unseen person if he can help them. The trunk closes and someone gets in the car, but Casey notices spilled food trays in the mirror and slowly turns her head to look at the driver's seat. It's not Claire's dad. The man acts calm and collected, and Claire tells him he has the wrong car. He puts a mask over his mouth and sprays the girl in the back seat in the face with an aerosol spray. He doesn't spray Casey, who's in the front seat, though. That is, until she tries to open her door. Then he puts his mask on and lunges towards her, and we get our opening credits and title card, which I think are awesome. Very well done, because when the names come on the screen, there's multiple of them. So it's a great subtle hint at the theme of this movie. We see Casey being wheeled down a hallway as she starts to regain consciousness, and the girls are placed in a room. When Casey wakes up, Claire and Marcia are sitting upright on the bed, shaking in panic, saying that they woke up there. Claire asks what happened to her dad, and then the man who abducted them enters the room and sits down in a chair. He said, "I choose you first," and grabs Marcia and takes her away, but not before Casey tells her to piss her britches. We hear Marcia crying and yelling for a little bit before the man opens the door and tosses her back in with the other two, and he grunts, shakes his hand as if he were hurt, and leaves. She says he wanted her to dance for him, and we see that she did, in fact, piss down her leg. We cut to a restaurant where young Casey is with her dad and uncle, who's telling them about a big buck he saw, and then we cut back to the room where Casey is petrified. Next, we see Dr. Fletcher walking into her office, and the news is talking about the abduction of three girls. She sits at her desk, and we see an email from Barry S. that says, "I need to see you. Urgent." Claire tries to open the door, and then she says they should fight him. Casey says the man is too strong, but that's when Claire says she's basically a ninja because of her karate classes. Claire and Marcia try to talk Casey into ganging up on the guy, but Casey tells them to shut up and to blow her. Okay. We cut back to young Casey, who's hunting in the woods with her dad and uncle. Back in the room again, Casey says she'll let them know when she hears something that makes sense, but they don't even know what this is yet. That's the opening set of scenes. What'd you guys think?
You know, it's funny how your mind plays tricks on you, because I saw this way back when it first came out, and I hadn't watched it since. And honestly, I had no idea that Casey was Anya Taylor-Joy, because for some reason in my head, I thought it was Hailee Steinfeld. Like, for some reason, I don't know if I was getting it mixed up with the True Grit remake. I don't know, but they do kind of look alike here a little bit. But regardless, it was definitely a surprise when Anya popped up on my screen. Like I said, though, this movie does bother me. Like, the whole start, especially. The whole start and the last set of scenes, whenever I'll get to that. But the whole premise involving the girls, I think it's too close to real life with abductions and things that really happen. So, I don't know. That's just, it's hard for me to escape real life with this. And maybe that's why it bothers me so much. I don't know. It always has. But that tension the movie creates starts right off the bat. And the way it's shot is just typical M. Night beauty. Like, he actually said that shooting this film was the most challenging of his career up to this point, and hired cinematographer Mike Giolakis, who, if that sounds familiar, we brought him up on our It Follows episode, don'tgooutthere.com. Just another beautifully shot movie. And did you know that Dr. Fletcher is played by Betty Buckley? The same Betty Buckley who was Miss Collins in the OG Carrie. Shout out to Betty Buckley, still killing it at her age. I definitely looked that up to make sure she was still alive. Gripping first set to reel me in here.
Also, Split is something I forgot was a Blumhouse movie. Like, that is not something that clicked in my head until I watched this movie here. ATJ is not typically like a loser outcast, which she appears to be cast as here. So I thought she played this role well. This is one of the scariest scenarios to me, because you can say you would do something differently, But as a teenager, like in this setting, would you do anything but sit there frozen like, wait, someone's really trying to kidnap us? Like, you would want to think that you would, but in that headspace at that time, I'm not so sure, you know? And I think that was really, that's what makes this so uncomfortable and so scary, man. And the peeing yourself is, man, that's an embarrassing reaction, but it's very natural in situations like this when you're frightened, for sure. I will say, I'm not saying anything about Dennis. He's a gross, or this Dennis character in his mind is a gross piece of shit. But if all I had to do was dance, I'd be dancing my motherfucking ass off, is all I'm saying. I mean, whatever it would do to shut him up. And look, Casey as a character in this early part is being kind of miserable. We don't know everything about her yet, so she kind of seems standoffish and a little bit like a bitch. But I don't necessarily disagree that these three trying to beat his ass would have worked. But, I mean, that's just me. A good set of scenes, even though we have a kidnapping, I would say nothing has really happened. Like, we had a kidnapping, but nothing like crazy over the top has happened yet. They're building the story. And well, the last thing, M. Night's movies always have a good score, you know, good sound to try to intensify the suspense. I think that they do it again here. So that's all I had.
Real quick before you go, Nico, Mike, you said they may not have been able to kick his ass, but at least try. Here's the thing that I think movies, they don't do enough of. No one ever tries kicking the dude in the nuts. Pull a Bobby Hill.
No, I know.
Like, you never see someone, like, when they're pinned up against the wall being choked, kick them in the nuts. It works. Go ahead.
And that's probably why we don't see it, is because it works and would kind of ruin the movie.
Well, yeah, man, that's my thing. Like, Casey's getting mad at them. I was like, you can at least try to beat this motherfucker up. Just give it an old shot. That's all.
All right, starting off, fun fact right off the rip, Anya Taylor-Joy got this role before M. Night watched her in The Witch. I just think it's super impressive the director she worked with so early. This is a horrific scenario, a stranger getting into your car and attacking you. As a person, you know, who is an uncle, and I'm sure, you know, other father, uncles, friends to young girls, this is horrifying, and it's realistic, so it's a very scary thing. But I do have to wonder what the hell Casey is thinking. I don't give her a pass, Mike, because she proves later on she's very resourceful. You had plenty of time to escape this car. Moment must have been too big, and you pissed down your leg, metaphorically. The other girl literally does it. Horrifying for Marsha being pit first, unknowing what he wants to do to you. And I got to give shout out to CinemaSins for pointing this out. But it's either impressive or extremely unbelievable that Dr. Fletcher, this older woman, and she's not even gasping for breath at all after walking up three flights of winding stairs. Maybe she just has elite cardio. I don't know. And oof. I know this might be a hot take, but I put oof, Claire and Marsha. I felt bad for them. They're getting acted circles around by Anya in this scene. I don't know. To me, they came across like they're acting and not like really in the situation. I didn't think they were the best with their line delivery in this part. But I did think it was a solid open, and I'm intrigued with the film.
Yeah, Nico, you mentioned like she had plenty of time to get out of the car. Here's the thing. Get out of the car as quickly as you can, because worst case scenario, you're in a parking lot. There's other people around. Yell, call some attention, because even if he gets out of the car and catches you, odds are someone's going to see it going down. So that's a gripe I have as well. All right. The kidnapper walks into Dr. Fletcher's office and said he was inspired. She looks at some fashion sketches he did, which is funny because Anya Taylor-Joy in Last Night in Soho, fashion sketches were also prevalent there. But anyway,
there you go.
She tells him they're artistic. He tells her the email was just normal stuff. He's feeling overwhelmed. She tells him his work told her that he's a model employee and he's doing well. He asks how old she is and who will take care of them when she's gone and that no one knows they exist. He says he shouldn't have emailed her and he's too impulsive and heads for the door. She tells him she doesn't want him to leave and asks if something happened, but he assures her he's doing much better. He grabs his sketches and leaves. And later, Dr. Fletcher watches TV with another older lady who says she doesn't understand how she works with her patients. Back in the room, the girls look through the crack in the door and see a woman pacing around saying, "Dennis, admit what you've done." The girls cry out, and the lady heads inside the door. When we see her, it's Barry, dressed as a woman. He tells them not to worry and that he'll talk. She'll talk to him. The girls are mind fucked, and Barry tells them he's not allowed to touch and exits the room. Dr. Fletcher meets with a man and tells him about her patients and their abilities. Back in the room, the girls talk about what they just saw, and Barry comes in to clean and tells them to keep their area clean and gives them cleaning supplies. He tells the girls that his alter ego, Patricia, reminded him not to bother them and that they're their sacred food. Dr. Fletcher has some flies in her, or has some files in her bed beside her, and we see a sketch of a monster in Barry's file before cutting back to the girls in the room. Barry is sitting in the doorway with a doofus look on his face, and he says his name is Hedwig. He says someone is coming for them and they won't like it. He's done awful things to people and he'll do awful things to them. He says he's 9 and he's not the guy who took them. Casey tells Hedwig that he's actually coming for him and not them. McAvoy absolutely crushes this. Casey tries to manipulate him, but he runs out and shuts the door behind him. Casey tells the girls he said they made the room safe and points out that it's all new drywall. The girls start knocking on the walls and Claire finds a clanking spot in the ceiling. She starts bashing it with her shoe and finds a grate. Before she can get the hole big enough, Hedwig returns. Marcia and Casey hold the door shut, keeping him out, giving Claire enough time to get the grate open and crawl up. The door is finally forced open, and it's no longer Hedwig. He's Dennis now, complete with a wardrobe change, and he is pissed. Claire navigates through a boiler room and then hides in a locker as Dennis runs after her. He finds her, though, and tells her she shouldn't trick children. Dennis is a real neat freak and tells her she's ruined her sweater by making it dirty and makes her give it to him. He fixes the drywall on the ceiling and tells Marcia and Casey that Claire will be separate now. He takes the girl's clothing and he leaves. Go ahead.
Okay, and I don't know if I'm spoiling anything because surely people aren't listening to this without having watched the movie. But knowing that Dennis is holding the others back and pretending to be Barry in the doctor's office for sure. But even the first time, like, you can tell something is a little off, like whether that's Betty's acting or McAvoy's or both. But even the little thing like him OCD fixing the candy bowl. Now, the old lady that lives, is it next door? I don't know. Anna's her name, and I don't know anything about her because this is literally her only IMDb credit. But spin the wheel with your thumb, you dumbasses, made me laugh. Like, that was a great line. And what a fantastic fucking reveal for the first time, though, that the girls see that it's not two people like you think it is in that room, and it's just him as Patricia. Fantastic reveal. And it's not one that's like one and done. It's on subsequent viewings. It's still just as great to me. And you mentioned it, McAvoy as Hedwig is just unbelievable. Like, to me, that's probably the most drastic change from all the personalities. And what he says to the girls in this group of scenes about awful things going to be done to them is pretty damn frightening. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's crazy you can get so encompassed in a performance that I, at least, lose that it's the same actor sometimes. And I've never seen another movie that's done that to me. Like, this scene between Anya and Hedwig is brilliantly done on just so many levels. And, I mean, yeah, we know McAvoy's great, but you could tell here, even more than The Witch, that Anya Taylor-Joy was going to be just fantastic. She was just going to blow up. Obviously, she has. Another just very tension-high set of scenes, if that's even a phrase, a word to use, with Claire pretty much doing what Casey did in the open. Just getting so close to escape, pissing her leg, like Nico said. And you know that she isn't going to make it, but regardless, it's just so tense. But or how the hell did he know that she was in the locker? Like, that was kind of like, meh, okay.
So, just a side note, Barry is, like, the most annoying one he does. Like, he's definitely, well, he's not my least favorite from, like, a person standpoint, but he's the least interesting, I guess. And again, I'm very interested outside of this film to know what the field of psychology thinks about split personality disorder. Like, is it still like, is this still an accepted thing? Like, what is the proper way to go about that? I'd be curious to know if anyone listening right now has any insight into that. I find it fascinating. I will say this old lady wanting to buy this off the infomercial reminds me of that episode of South Park where all the old people buy stuff from like Home Shopping Network and the commercials. Stan's dad Stan's grandpa buys him a bolo tie and he has to wear it. I thought that was funny. Billy, $9,000. Anyway, we're introduced to Patricia here. And I got to be honest, Hedwig's probably the best performance, but Patricia is a frightening character that he can slip into. Like, I really love McAvoy as Patricia. And imagine being one of these three girls. Like, this man just went from, like, this neat freak, germaphobe, et cetera, as Hedwig would say, to this dignified British lady. Like, there's a lot happening here, and I would be totally mind-fucked, for sure. Just so confused. Hedwig, the way he says et cetera, always cracks me up, man. And just a great fucking scene between McAvoy and Anya Taylor-Joy. As far as Hedwig and her back and forth, I thought it was great. And it's really smart for Casey to start working on one of his personalities, trying to get one of them to warm up to her. Like, I think it's at least an idea, a way to try to get out of there. he says, "You're being bitches. That is an aggressive 9-year-old, sir." I mean, I was saying that, but I blame the WWF, not anybody else. That's the only reason I knew those words. He has no excuse. And again, I love the suspense we get here of them keeping Hedwig out and then him turning back in to Dennis so quickly, clothes and all. Like, now he has a completely different outfit. He's a completely different personality. I just think the transition between characters throughout the film, starting here in this set of scenes, is fucking brilliant. Yeah, just really, really good set of scenes, starting to build suspense, starting to build tension, in my opinion. I'm a fan.
All right, let's start this set of scenes off with just a compliment to James McAvoy. And I thought it was, he's incredible. And I thought, M. Night, you ain't slick, brother. I like the name nod to one of your previous movies. Barry saying, "I'm here just for a visit." I like that. That was nice. And to answer your question, Barry, no one cares about us. I got a chuckle out of this older lady. Them infomercials be hell, don't they? I've gotten got by them before. Hell, I bought that Keith Urban guitar, and guess how many times I played it? 0 times. And damn it, don't go in there. So close to a shout out for our show. If I'm one of those hostage girls, I'm so confused by what the hell is going on with this fella. First, this guy is holding me hostage, and now he's making me clean. Man, if you don't go to hell. This film caught a lot of criticism for not displaying DID accurately, and I'm going to stay out of that because I don't have the expertise. But man, how incredible is James acting in these different roles? Like, it's crazy how good he transitions from person to person that he's portraying. Smart thinking by Casey, trying to manipulate the different personalities within the one person. Claire attempting to escape is so well shot, and it was smart thinking to hide in the locker, but damn it, calm down the breathing. And I know that's easy for me to say as I just watched the movie. I know that's got to be an extremely stressful, intense situation. This is such an interesting kidnapping story. I'd be so scared and freaked out, but this guy is so strange, I wouldn't know what to think. These scenes were more action-packed, and I enjoyed them. Go ahead, Dustin.
All right. Next, we see Dr. Fletcher talking about people with multiple personality disorder and how different each personality is. And then we see Barry meeting with Dr. Fletcher in her office discussing his sketches. She asks him who he is, and he says, "Barry." She says she doesn't think he is. She says he's emailed him twice in 2 days for an unscheduled appointment, and she thinks it was a different personality and that he's there to tell her it's okay. She asks to speak with one of the others, but he says that can't happen. He tells her again he's Barry, but she's not buying it. She thinks it's Dennis. Dennis has been banned from taking the light because he's a pervert, among other reasons, but she knows it's him because he has OCD and he's adjusted the candy dish twice since he got there. We also find out Patricia is also banned. He continues trying to convince her that he's Barry before heading out. Next, we see Dr. Fletcher talking with M. Night Shyamalan himself, where he has a big bowl of reheated Hooters wings and works on a computer. She throws jabs at him and Hooters, and they watch security footage of Dennis walking through spilled trash outside. She says that's normal, that normal people would have walked around it, and that was an act. Back in the basement, Marcia tells Casey they're not going to die. And we cut back to young Casey with her dad and her uncle standing over a dying deer. Casey wakes up in the room with Patricia standing over her with a food tray. Patricia brushes Casey's hair and tells them to eat. Patricia puts flowers in Casey and Marcia's hair and tells them to come with her. The three walk down the hall to a kitchen, and Patricia says Claire couldn't come eat with him. Patricia cuts on the radio and says she heard Nico's people's music aids in digestion. Patricia makes a sandwich and cuts it crooked, so she starts over. Marcia gets bold and nails Patricia with an ECW chair shot and bolts for the exit. Patricia tells Casey to go back to her room, and Marcia hits a dead end. Behind her, Patricia stoically approaches her with a knife. Dennis tells Casey that the three of them will be kept separate and that the beast is coming for her. We flash back to the hunting scene for a brief moment before we see grown-up Casey in bed and Hedwig cuddling her, saying that she lied to him. He tells her that all the different personalities have to wait in a chair until Barry decides who gets the light, except him. Hedwig can take the light anytime he wants. He asks her if he can kiss her, and she says yeah, and he awkwardly goes in for the smooch and tells her she might be pregnant now. I laughed. Hedwig is the best part of the movie, and he knows music. Kanye is his favorite. He just liked me for real. Casey tries to get Hedwig to take her back to his room, and he thinks it's a trick. She tells him she gets in trouble at school on purpose to get away from everyone, and Hedwig says he has to go. Dr. Fletcher asks Barry about the email in the middle of the night again, and he tells her that he woke up feeling better. She asks him about an incident where he groped a couple of young girls. She suspects it's Dennis again and asks about the beast and tells him he can trust her and that she knows that if she says Kevin's full name, it will force him back into the light, but she won't do that. We see a change in facial expressions, and Dennis tells her that he and Patricia were ridiculed. He doesn't know who emailed her and that he and Patricia have taken control. She confirms that they've never met the beast, and he's not the 24th alter ego. He's a fantasy. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I got the most in the set of scenes, so just bear with me for just a second. But, you know, that speech from Dr. Fletcher at the beginning of this is very gripping to me. I mean, this is based on real research of people with DID. I mean, I know you said it's caught shit for not being accurate, but this is a real theory that I looked up, and maybe not common, but it's definitely a real theory out there. And it was some very enthralling questions asked in the speech, in my opinion. I mean, like, I have a fun fact about that at the end and who this is really based on. But very interesting when a movie can pique your interest enough to want to learn more about either a real life case or disorder, or in this instance, both. So how do I know this stuff is fact? Very next scene with the signature M. Night cameo, we talk about man's incessant need to be in the proximity of augmented breasts, and it was like she was talking right through the TV screen to myself. So nothing but facts being spit in this movie. I know we can't picture anyone else but McAvoy playing this, but you know they weren't just in talks. They were in negotiations with Joaquin Phoenix before the contracts talks fell through. Like, I can't help but wonder how this would have played out with Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, he's amazing. But James gave a 10 of 10 performance here. I think it could only have been matched, not exceeded, in my opinion. My two cents. Crazy that, according to Anya, this kiss scene between her and James as Hedwig is actually her first on-screen kiss. She described it as awkward, obviously, as he was playing a 9-year-old boy. And, quote, I had my eyes open the whole time. You might be pregnant now, cracked me up. And hey, last thing. So Marcia and Claire are the two girls. They're supposed to be implied that they're the ones that made Dennis or Barry, whichever one it was, touch their breasts as a prank at the zoo, right? Because honestly, I never made that connection until this watch through. So, and my only issue with that, if that's the case, is that I assumed Claire was turning 16 based on the opening set of scenes with her dad talking about buying her a car at the start and that sort of thing. And the doctor here said that the two girls were 17 or 18. So that's my only confusion. Feel free to chime in there.
You got me on that one, brother. Definitely. Do we know how much of this part of the story is taken from a real life case at all? There just seems to be a lot of information that Dr. Fletcher's character knows, you know, as a character. So somebody studied and looked into something to have this base level of knowledge, which again, I found interesting. And then we finally get an explanation for why Dennis would want to kidnap them. He has an affinity for watching young girls dance. Like, at least, okay, that's answered. Because up to this point, I don't really know, you know, why they're there. And Night cameo, there it is, baby. I'm just going to tell you, I hate this part where we go back to young Casey and her dad and uncle. Like, especially knowing what's coming, it just makes my skin crawl. I fucking hate it. Oh, God, I hate it. I'm sorry, she's a bad person, but Patricia is humorous as shit, man. I think McAvoy does a great job. He's very witty in that role. And how did I ask this a lot when we have movies like this, but where the fuck did all these, like, secret doors and tunnels and stuff come from? That just seems so unrealistic to me. And again, it's a lot of movies like that. It's not just this movie. Nico, I got to ask, does y'all's music aid digestion like it says in the film? Because that's an interesting factoid there. I've never heard that before. some really stupid stuff here. She tried to go full Steve Austin 98 with that chair, except she didn't bring the heat like Steve would have done. So bad choice. Great use of tension. I think the knife to Marcia's stomach here is really effective. I thought we were about to get a cool kill, which is what I was hoping for, honestly. And McAvoy is just so fantastic in these characters where he's Hedwig. Just complete character shift. The kiss is awkward. The line, you might be pregnant now, was fucking hilarious to me. This is such a great use of tension. The knife to Marcia's stomach. I really thought and were hoping that we were going to get a cool kill here. Like, I was like, oh, shit, this is about to really turn up. Turns out that didn't happen. McAvoy is just so fantastic in these moments where he's Hedwig. Just a complete character shift from what he was just doing. The line, you might be pregnant now, cracked me the fuck up. Kanye West is his main man. He liked Dustin for real. Like him and Hedwig and Dustin got a lot in common, brother. Another great back and forth with Dr. Fletcher and whatever character you want to say McAvoy is in here. Just the explanation of the beast, the true explanation of Patricia and Dennis kind of being his darker sides of his personalities. I loved it. And the last thing this doctor should have done was tell the fucking beast or tell him that the beast was not real. That just seemed like a really dumb idea there.
All right. So this film walked so COVID protocol could run, wearing masks, giving speeches via Skype. Who would have knew this would have come to fruition so soon? Dr. Fletcher has an interesting job. I have no clue how you treat a patient that's basically multiple people in one body. I'm very intrigued by the conversations between the two. And just like you guys mentioned, hey, there it is, the good old M. Night cameo in his movies. And I was like, I feel you, Marcia. I'd have the exact same facial reaction that you're having. I am so weirded out by this guy. This is completely irrelevant to the film, but using a plastic cutting board can put tons of microplastics into your food. Use a wooden one if you can. That's just a health fun fact for anyone listening. And good shit, Marcia, bashing him with the chair. But if it were me, I'd have continued pummeling him with it. That was your opportunity to make an escape, injure the guy. But like you said, Mike, she didn't really bring the heat whenever she swung that chair on him. And it's funny how and how often Hedwig uses the word etc. Hedwig must have watched the movie Hitch before coming to talk to Casey. Man went 90% in for the kiss. But I think he went in like 95, to be honest. And McAvoy gives such a haunting stare to Miss Fletcher as she's talking about the beast. And this is the last thing I got, but this exchange really reminds me of that Pearl monologue at the end of the film. It's something that some could find boring or maybe drug out, but the acting is so good between the two, I'm really tuned in for it.
So I want to, you mentioned his use of et cetera, and Mike, you did too. That's so perfect, though, because when you think about kids that are like that age, 8, 9 years old, when they learn a new word, they wear it out. And so that's so funny. It's so perfect to me. And then I meant to say this earlier, Mike, when you talked about Barry being your least favorite of the personality because he's boring. I think that's like that's very intentional because the multiple personalities wanted to put a boring one forward so sure. that they could pass off in everyday life. So I just wanted 100%. To 100%.
No, that's all totally right. That's totally fair. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Back in her room, Casey wakes up to Hedwig telling her to come with him. They go to his room where he turns on some music and starts cutting a rug. She's confused because she thought his CD player was by a window, and he points out his drawing of a window on the wall. She begs him to let her leave, but he says he can't and says she should go back to her room. He ends up giving her Dennis's handheld radio, and she turns it on and tries to talk to a man on the other end. And then Hedwig charges at her with a baseball bat. The man on the other end is useless as tits on a boar hog, and then Patricia takes over for Hedwig. She takes the radio from Casey and turns it off. She takes Casey back to her room and says she will explain the meaning. Casey spots a nail on the floor by the door and grabs it before Dennis enters the room. He tells her about the beast and says it's almost over. We flash back again to young Casey with her uncle, and we see that he's a sick bastard. He's in his underwear howling and tells Casey to take off her clothes. After he gets dressed again, Casey has the shotgun pointed at him, but he takes it from her without getting what he deserved. Dr. Fletcher goes to her computer to see 20 emails from Barry saying they need her. Dennis checks his watch and then heads to a gate out front where Dr. Fletcher is arriving in a cab. Dennis tells her they're fine, and Dr. Fletcher convinces Dennis to take her inside to talk. He says he wants to talk about Kevin and what his mother did to them. She says she'll never stop fighting for him. He tells her he has actually met the beast before. He tells her the beast was real and he just emerged. He's tall, muscular, and has long hair and fingers. He's on the move. She tells him she doesn't understand, and there must be limits to a human. He tells her he's going to meet him. She tells him she's going to go now and asks if she can use the restroom as she stuffs a napkin in the door hardware to keep it from closing. She goes down the hall and opens a door where she finds Claire laying on the floor. Dennis slams the door shut and she pleads with him and gets drugged for her troubles. He carries her into another room and lays her on the couch. Claire and Marcia look for something that can maybe help them escape, and Dennis exits the front gate again. He picks up some flowers from a florist and Dr. Fletcher wakes up. Claire tells Marcia to try and jimmy the slide bolt open on the door, and Dennis arrives at a subway platform. Casey tries to escape, but the door is locked. But she does get access to a computer. Marcia continues trying to get the door unlocked, and Dennis places the flowers on the ground. Casey sees 23 files on the computer, one for each of the personalities. And we find out that one of them has diabetes, word to Wilford Brimley. Dennis gets on the train and takes his shirt off and lowers to the floor. Casey continues trying to escape, and Dennis stands back up and climbs on top of the train. He then runs down the subway track. He's now the Beast. He runs fast as fuck, boy, and the girls all continue trying for their escapes. Dr. Fletcher continues to gather herself, and the Beast jumps on the gate. Dr. Fletcher writes something on a piece of paper, and we hear a growl behind her. She grabs a knife and tries to say Kevin's name, but doesn't have the strength. She sees the Beast, and he's one veiny bastard. He grabs her from behind and bear hugs her, and he's impervious to her stabs. He squeezes the life out of her, and that's the next set of scenes. What'd you guys think?
Ooh, hey, first of all, maybe the best dancing I've ever seen in a movie. Like, I was dying laughing. I wonder if it was hard for Anya to keep a straight face during that set of scenes. Okay, so besides knowing to pee on yourself when someone is going to rape you, what's the point of that backstory of sexual assault with Casey? Like, did we really need that, truthfully? Like, I don't know. Like, I thought that was so fucking disgusting. So I wish she would have killed him. Yeah, I wish she would have killed him there. In fact, you know, that entire shotgun scene actually is very reminiscent of the kitchen scene in Unbreakable where the boy that was going to shoot Bruce Willis. I'm sure that was on purpose. And, man, having her dad die and adopting her, I mean, maybe that's in the next set of scenes, but God, fuck, man, that's just... I don't know. Was that really needed? Yeah. Another just very tense set of scenes here as we get closer to the third act. Fun fact, at the end of the set of scenes, James McAvoy actually broke his hand during filming after he got so angry at his own performance during a scene. He just like Christian Bale for real. He got mad and hit a door, which he thought was a fake door. If it wasn't, let's just pause this for a second. Okay. Obviously it wasn't a fake door. It was a metal one, broke his hand. What if it was a fake door, man? You just busted through a prop, and now prop people got to fix it. God damn it. Anyway, here, actually, where Patricia is boarding the train with the and the glasses go on, maybe she's turning back to Dennis right there. I don't know, because didn't she turn to Patricia when she got the flowers, and then I think maybe she put the, I don't know. I don't know which one it is, but you can see the wound on his hand during that set of scenes. There you go. But listen, biggest nitpick of the movie. There is no fucking chance Marcia is unlocking that door with the coat hanger or even coming that close. Like, come on. Like, first of all, that's the longest fucking coat hanger I've ever seen. Second of all, she could, I don't know why I'm explaining why that's stupid as hell. It's obvious. It's obvious.
Not the same, but I have gotten a few set of keys out of cars with a coat hanger. They were pretty far away.
As a door? That's not like
I unlocked my, hey, I wish my sister listened to this. Because I unlocked her car door with the coat hanger.
But you could see. You could see the lock. You knew what you were going for. You can't do that on the other side of a door.
Yeah, to Brian's point, like, she's... Fair enough. Right, we'll say she's like 5'5", and she's standing on the ground. This clothes hanger has to go up over top of a presumably 8-foot door. Come on.
Or, and on the way down. Yeah, that's door. Crazy.
I agree. No, I promise I get it, but I'm just going to forgive it because I thought it was a cool scene. McAvoy is awesome here as a 9-year-old dancing, and bear with me because this is the most I have. He just does such a good job of portraying this Hedwig character that in the moment where he gets kind of betrayed or he realizes he's been betrayed by Casey, I almost feel bad for Hedwig, which is nuts because he does such a good job of portraying this 9-year-old kid. And I like Casey's thinking here and the, you know, bravery to kind of continue to like do it right in front of him, knowing that eventually we're going to be back to Dennis. But anyway, and then he's able to slip right back into Patricia is really incredible. And again, I mentioned, I'm not sure if it's the editing or the acting. Either way, it's really seamless and flawless, and I think it's great. Then we're back in the past, and again, I hate this fucking part of the movie. This sick fuck of an uncle, man. Fuck this guy. He's also an asshole in the show Orange is the New Black. Complete, total piece of shit. So this guy does a really good job of portraying a bad dude. Anyway, and I wish Casey would have shot this fucker as a child. It would have been an awesome scene in this film to me. But it wouldn't have made the trauma that she has to deal with now. So I guess that's fair. Had Dr. Fletcher never been to this man's house before? How long has Barry, Dennis, Hedwig been, you know, her, you know, the therapist? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway.
Why would the doctor go to the,
I guess that's fair,
the patient's house ever?
I don't know. He feels like a man. This particular patient feels like, I might want to do a check-in, and I don't know the rules of therapy, yeah. So that's fair. Fair enough. Just really good back-and-forth dialogue, again, between the two, though. And the idea that a blind person can have personalities that can see is really wild to me. Like, I want to know, in the field of psychology, is that a real thing? Please, if we were doing a YouTube video, I'd say, please comment below. But I think you know what I mean. I want to hear from someone that may be able to touch on that. That's fascinating. And you can tell, and this is where Fletcher's demeanor changes, that she's scared as shit, and she starts to get nervous in this setting, and I think it's portrayed really well. I'd kind of forgotten all about Marcia here, you know, and you know, that's just me. But you can tell the personalities in him are really disappointed at how Dr. Fletcher took, you know, the conversation they had about the beast. Like, you could just tell it. He reads it, or he reads it, and you could tell he's upset about it. But yeah, I mean, I wish they'd showed a little bit more of the transformation into the beast here. Personally, the entire film had been building to, and I would have liked to see it happen a little bit more, but that's just me. But I love the shots of him running back, showing up in the house behind Dr. Fletcher. I thought that was really, really fucking well done. And last thing, this is an intense death scene. I can't think of how many, like, squeeze deaths that we've had on this show, but I can't remember another one that's, like, just basically a bear hug into death. I thought it was really effective. And the hearing her last gasp of air, I thought was, like, really well done.
Dustin, it's so funny, because I wrote, damn, Hedwig over here cutting the rug. I can't believe we both used the same same phrase again. More great acting, specifically facial acting by Anya. She's so good and already a superstar. I can't wait to see more from her in the future. Incredible display of acting between the two leads in this bedroom scene. I can't lie, this walkie-talkie session is frustrating. It seems like, from what I recall, and I could be wrong, M. Night always has some kind of comic, some comedic moment in his movies, and this one just didn't work for me. Uncle John is an animal, a phrase that I like to use a lot. What the fuck is wrong with you letting or getting your niece undressed in the woods? I wish, and like you guys said, I wish you would have killed him too. I know Dustin is losing it, seeing all these emails in a row. God forbid you double text him. I know sending 30 emails would make him snap on you. We get great emotional acting by Dr. Fletcher finding Claire on the floor. And hell yeah, Marcia, Laurie Strode his ass with the hanger. I'm here for it, girl. The score playing along as everything's going on is so perfect. McAvoy becoming the Beast is shot perfectly. I'd like to see the Beast and Grandpa from Get Out race. Co-host, who do y'all think wins? James McAvoy is yoked, son. No diddy. I don't think DID makes someone's skin impenetrable to knives, right? Let's be just a little bit realistic. And the last thing I got is, we get a really haunting look on the Beast's face as he drops Dr. Fletcher dead on the floor. And you're right, Mike, or Dustin, we haven't really seen, or whoever mentioned, I can't remember, a lot of bear hug kills. Like, you're right, I can't recall of any. Yeah.
I wanted the ref to come in and start raising Dr. Fletcher's arm for the three count. We don't know that she actually tapped out, but all right. Casey continues playing with videos of all the, or playing the videos of all the different personalities and keeps trying to escape. She sees in the video where the keys are stored and finds them on the wall behind her. As she heads down the hallway, we hear some clanging and banging from another room. She sees Marcia's bloody dead body on the floor and then finds Claire laying on the floor in her room. She tells Claire to come with her, but then Claire's body is pulled across the floor and the beast starts eating her. Casey locks the door from the outside and makes a run for it. The Beast bashes pushes the door open using his super strength just to bend the lock. Casey finds the note Dr. Fletcher was writing, and it's Kevin's full name. Before she can make sense of it, though, the Beast starts doing his best Spider-Man impression and is climbing up the wall behind her. She says Kevin's name multiple times, and the Beast stumbles around the room. We get a flashback to Kevin's childhood and his mom yelling at him for making a mess. Present-day Kevin asks Casey who she is and what's happening. He sees Dr. Fletcher's dead body on the floor. He swears he was on a bus and doesn't remember anything after that. He doesn't even know what day or year it is. It's like Robin Williams in Jumanji. He tells Casey where a shotgun is and tells her to kill him. Kevin starts having a meltdown now, and all of his different personalities start coming through and talking to Casey in a masterclass showing from James McAvoy. When Hedwig says he's giving the light to Dennis and Patricia, Casey grabs a shotgun. She tries to use the old full name trick again, but Patricia tells her Kevin is asleep far away. Casey is able to get the door open thanks to Dr. Fletcher's napkin trip, and she makes a run for it. As Patricia morphs into the Beast, Casey finds Kevin's locker and gets the shotgun shells. She heads through the boiler room, trying to load the shotgun, but the Beast takes her down. She gets a shell in the gun, but the Beast is gone. She tries to find an exit and cries for help. We get flashbacks of young Casey with her uncle, and her dad has died of a heart attack. The Beast crawls on the ceiling towards Casey and smashes the lights on his way. She fires a shot off, but misses him. She fires another shot off, and he tells her the gun can't hurt him. He's not human. She shoots him twice, but he bounces back quickly. He uses superhuman strength, whoop whoop, to bend the bars she's hiding behind, and he sees scars all over Casey's body. He starts crying and says she's different than the rest, and her heart is pure, and he walks away. Next set of scenes is the ending. What do you guys think?
Well, first of all, does bear hug kill, does it count? Does cocaine bear count when it's like an actually real bear? I don't know. Does it count, Mike? Anyway, look, this set of scenes where Casey finds the Beast eating Claire's insides is one of the most disturbing scenes I've ever seen. Like, I know that sounds super dramatic, and it's not even gory. I mean, hell, isn't this PG-13 movie? I think, isn't it? But I think it's because, of the buildup the entire time, like how this has affected me anyway, and how it doesn't show you anything in my mind, like kind of fills in the rest. Like, it just fucked me. Like, it just, that really bothered me. It really disturbed me. And, there's another fun fact, the last set of scenes that I forgot to mention when Casey was on Kevin's computer. And you know me, because I make this shit up sometimes, so for it to possibly be real makes me happy. But on the computer, there are QuickTime files of all his various personalities, like you said. And there's one in the bottom right-hand corner called it was named Mr. Pritchard. And that's likely a reference to the character Lionel Pritchard from Signs. Like, what if he was Lionel Pritchard in the movie Signs? Like, that's crazy. Anyway, again, acting clinic from James as he goes just through act like each identity, like one after another, like that, and just switching back and forth. I thought that was amazing. Also, love the napkin in the door coming back into play, and the shotgun coming back into play from the hunting trip. I liked that. Very typical M. Night shit that I really loved. And what a goddamn shot of the Beast climbing the ceiling after running after her and knocking out each light on his way. That was awesome. That was it.
All right, man. The keys being up there on the wall the whole time was kind of bland to me. Like I've been singing this movie's praises for a while, but that felt super convenient to me. Even I can't overlook that one. The way the Beast yanked Claire is fucking terrifying, like you mentioned. Just one of the – and I'm going to tell her joy, her facial acting here is awesome, the way she reacts to it. It's almost like a visceral reaction. I thought it was really good. I will say the Beast, you know, one of the weaknesses of the Beast is saying its name. Like, who the fuck is this Valak? Like, I wasn't like a huge fan of that. But again, we're dealing with multiple personalities, so I guess it makes sense. It just, I don't know, two little complaints are off the top. But those are really my only qualms with the film, honestly. And again, watching McAvoy run the gamut of all these personalities here, God, it's awesome, man. Just back to back to back to back. He was knocking them out. Like, I thought it was, God, it was great. And, you know, again, here she goes. She has the chance to kill someone like she should have done with her fucking uncle. But, you know, how that goes. You know what? Y'all can say what you want about the Beast in the bracket. I don't know, man. This man, I have seen more game tape on the Beast here. I think he's pretty Unstoppable myself personally. So I'm still going to side with my vote over The Devil because it's more fun. And I've never seen The Devil before, so I don't know what he's capable of. I don't have a whole lot of game tape on a physical being of The Devil.
Brother.
Okay.
Two things. I've seen The Devil. I married The Devil. And number two.
Oh, shit.
And number two, there's plenty of game footage out there on The Devil. Just read the Bible, brother.
I know, brother. That was the joke. But anyway, it's fine. Okay. Look, these flashbacks to her and her uncle are coming at a really bad time for her. And the thought of this sorry fucker taking care of her really just bums me out, man. Like, all the shit I gave her in the beginning of the film is totally valid, in my opinion, man. Her trauma responses are very valid and very evident here after seeing how she grew up. Like you mentioned, Brian, and this is my end here, I love the beast smashing all the lights as he's crawling up on the ceiling. I thought it was a cool-ass visual. Love the way that looked. And this is the first time, I believe, we hear the voice of the beast. And McAvoy, again, just completely different voice from all the other ones. Thought it was great. Along with the bending the bars visual and McAvoy's face there, I thought it was fucking brilliant.
All right, I don't have a lot for this set or the next set of scenes, but shout out to CinemaSins for this as well. But am I really supposed to believe Claire isn't going to scream when she's being dragged away by Beast? That bothered me. And like you mentioned, Mike, just a second, I wrote, insert Spider-Man pointing at each other, meaning with Kevin Crumb and Valak having the same weakness saying their names. I can't compliment McAvoy enough with his acting. Him becoming the Beast was so well done. Props to Anya as well, being resourceful and badass. But I have to ask, is that bird shot in these shotgun shells? Ain't no way in hell someone could take two shots like that and be okay.
He's not.
However, human. And like you just mentioned, like y'all were just talking about, however, this man McAvoy continues to act his ass off with the grunts and bending the iron bars. He's a scary ass person, but he wouldn't have beaten Black Phillip, though. I got to side with Black Phillip on that one. I think it's an interesting touch that he spares Casey because of her scars and her being tested in life. I did like that. That's all I got.
Let me just say that I only picked him in this after I said that the devil would run the table because there is no beating the devil, so it wasn't fair to even put him in.
Yeah, I mean, the only person that could beat the devil is Charlie Daniels if you give him a fiddle. But anyway.
I'd look the devil straight in his eyes and say, throw up your dick beaters, let's dance, man. That's what I mean, I ain't scared of no devil.
Charlie Daniels told him once, you son of a bitch, he's the best he's ever been.
It's weird. You've quoted country music four times in this episode. You got something to say?
So many times. He likes country music.
What? Yeah. I don't get it. Here's the ending. Casey sheds some tears, and then we see a man in the boiler room ripping a cig. He finds Casey and unlocks the cage she's in. He walks her upstairs, and we see that she's been held captive in a zoo this whole time. We see the guy who didn't help her earlier when Casey had the radio, and he calls the police. Punk. As Casey is being checked out in an ambulance, Kevin's lair is being examined by the police. Casey's uncle arrives, and she gives the cop a long stare when she's asked if she's ready to go. We see Kevin checking himself out in a mirror, and a few of the personalities start having a conversation, and Patricia says they're going to trust the beast. The news is playing in a diner, talking about Kevin, and a woman at the bar says it reminds her of a crazy guy in a wheelchair that was put away 15 years ago. As she tries to remember his nickname, David Dunn says, Mr. Glass, proving that this is, in fact, a sequel, and I don't know how anyone could say otherwise. End credits.
Yeah, I mean, that's it absolutely is a.
But also, I didn't put this, but anyone else think it was a little weird when Dunn says, Mr. Glass, the woman just like gets up and walks away like, oh, fuck this guy. She didn't even say, oh, that's it. And she's like, let me get out of here. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I actually don't have a lot on this besides, you know, saying that I loved the twist with Bruce Willis, and that makes this, because to me, otherwise, I don't know if I'm like super. Most of M. Night Shyamalan's other movies, at least I felt at the end fulfilled. Like, this one didn't end on a happy ending. Does everything have to end on a happy ending? No, I've said this, you know, I've said that a million times. But some movies, I feel like The Strangers, like I really wanted it to end on a happy note, and it didn't. And this one, like the two girls, man, being eaten alive like that, and then Anya is still having to probably go home, you know, with her uncle, it's just like it was not even close to happy ending. And so it wasn't what I wanted. I didn't care for it as much as I hoped I would, unless you count the Bruce Willis cameo as the ending, because that just makes it like, oh shit, that's awesome. It reminded me a lot of Marvel. I know this was a little after Marvel was doing that, but it really wasn't in like the heyday of Marvel doing this shit. So it was still kind of new. And it's like what Marvel does whenever they throw you a bone like that in the credit scene, you almost forget what the end of the movie was because you're so excited about that part. So I said a whole lot of nothing probably there, but go ahead.
I don't know. Something about comic books. I don't know what you said there, brother. I'm just kidding, man. The score at the very beginning here sounds like the Sinead O'Connor version of Nothing Compares to You. So I was like, are we about to get some Sinead O'Connor? But we did not. Also, for a minute, I thought they were going to do a whole it's all in her head, or make it try to seem like it's all in her head. I'm glad that we didn't go that route. I wasn't a fan of that, if that's what they did. And this last scene where McAvoy's just kind of talking to himself and all these different personalities, it's just fucking great, man. Great. I love the twist. Unbreakable, motherfucker. Awesome movie, too. Can't wait to do it one day.
Yeah, I don't have a lot here either. I just, for Casey, must feel so much relief escaping these zoo tunnels. And what a beautiful shot of them walking under the tiger catwalk. I thought that was visually stunning. It was a great shot. And damn, what a moment. Casey not wanting to leave with her guardian. You could feel her pain in the stare she gave the police officer. And I agree, Brian. It wasn't a happy ending for her. I didn't really care for that. More great acting from James as the film ends. I remember the hype when this movie came out and the big Bruce Willis reveal at the end. And it went way over my head. And maybe that's why the movie just doesn't stick with me like it should. And I hate to admit, I still haven't seen Unbreakable. But maybe that will change.
I, for one, am shocked that you haven't seen it.
All right. Let's knock out our social media comments and questions. We'll do Facebook first. Christina Tower just commented 30 minutes ago, so that was a really well-timed comment. Hey, guys, looking forward to your review. I really enjoyed this movie, even though the twist at the end was spoiled for me. Both McAvoy and Anya Taylor-Joy were phenomenal. Both gave outstanding performances in each of their roles. Thanks again, guys, and stay safe. Christina, thank you, and you stay safe. We really appreciate the comment.
Absolutely. It means a lot to us.
And we'll jump over to Instagram. Julia Eve commented, yay, excellent movie. My question is, why exactly does Kevin kidnap the girls? What purpose did that serve?
That's what I brought that up too.
Well, Dustin, do you want to answer that
one? Beasts.
Yeah, I do, because it was explicitly stated that they are food for the beast. And then we see the beast eating Claire. So
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but it's because they were food. And he knew that these two, he even says that these two girls were
not pure,
unpure,
pampered,
unpure,
no hardship kind of lifestyles. So unpure in his eyes. And, you know, Casey was kind of taken by mistake. And that's why Casey got to go free, because he found out, oh, she's not pure at all. Or she is pure. She's not perfect at all.
Did we ever decide if the two girls that made him grab her boobs, like, were those two girls or no?
I have no idea.
That's a good point. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so, because I think that they would have recognized him, right?
Yeah, you would think. You're right. You would think. And plus, there's that age discrepancy that I mentioned earlier, so I don't know.
Yeah. Plus, but I mean, on the flip side, though, maybe they wouldn't have recognized, because a lot of SA victims block stuff out, so they don't remember traumatic experiences. So maybe that was it. I don't know. I'll do the artist formerly known as Twitter. We only got two. That guy at Millhouse14108 says, James McAvoy acting clinic. Phenomenal range by an incredible actor who is mysterious, cynical, and disturbing throughout. Truly a sin he didn't get more praise for this work. Seriously sensational. Anya Taylor-Joy can call me anytime. 8 out of 10 for me. Love the show, fellas. Appreciate that. Everything's coming up, Millhouse. And then Anita Russell. Anita Russell reference. Said, really like this movie. McAvoy's change into each personality is great. This is the only one in the series I actually liked. That's kind of crazy, because I think Brian would back me up. Brian has said it multiple times. That's his favorite M. Night movie. Mike likes it. I like it. Unbreakable's good, man.
Yeah, Class is not good. That's bad. Bad. bad times at the theater that day.
I was so disappointed with that. Yeah.
I want to comment on the previous one really quick, Dustin. This was the first time I remember thinking, like after seeing this film, maybe the Oscars will show horror some love. Like I left the theater and literally thought to myself, no way this man doesn't at least get some kind of nomination. Not even a sniff, man. Like that was like the first time I really turned on that Academy Award ceremony personally. Like, dude, it doesn't get any better than McAvoy in this movie. Like, I don't know what acting, like what better acting you can have. And I remember literally instantly thinking, man, if they don't do it for horror right now in this movie, then they're never going to. So there you go. There's my little old man rant right there.
Nah, they hate horror for some reason. Brian, Dustin, y'all got any fun facts you want to share?
Okay, so I kind of brought this up earlier. Inspiration for the film, real-life multiple personality Billy Milligan, who was born in 1955 and died in 2014, charged with 3 rapes, was the first person diagnosed with multiple personality disorder to use an insanity defense by reason of that disorder, and also first to be acquitted thus. Milligan had 24 personalities consisting of 10 desirables and 13 undesirables, and they were all named here, but I'm not naming them all. Go look that up. And the last thing I have is this surpassed Paranormal Activity 3 as the highest grossing Blumhouse film worldwide and itself held the record until surpassed by Five Nights at Freddy's in 2023.
Dang, I had that fun fact, you son of a bitch. I'm just kidding. That's fine.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Oh, damn. I'm impressed you had a fun fact.
Damn right, brother. To comment on that, to piggyback, the budget for this film was $9 million and grossed $278 million, which, right, if I'm not mistaken, according to you, Brian, you sent the fact that the budget for Unbreakable, which in fairness, M. Night was coming off of The Sixth Sense, so here's a whole lot of money, make something just as successful. Unbreakable was around $75 million.
That's crazy because if you've seen that fucking movie, like,
nah, I know,
where did that budget go besides maybe Bruce Willis?
Where
maybe
did they film
$60 million for it?
Where did they film it?
I don't know.
New York or Toronto or one of those, but like that, like it kind of depends. But anyway,
wasn't Sam like Jackson in that too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need to watch that, brother.
I will when you pick sure. it.
It ain't a horror movie.
It's not really a horror. I don't think we're going to be able to cover it because it's not really horror.
It's pretty.
I got you.
Yeah. You should watch it anyway, brother. You'd like it.
All right.
If Dustin can watch Shawshank, then you can watch Unbreakable. It'll be fine.
I'm sure y'all will bully me into it one day. Let's jump into our favorite kill, least favorite kill in the rating. I'll go first. Favorite kill. I'll just go with Marcia because the gore effects of her eaten torso looked good. Least favorite kill. Kind of torn on this one. I felt bad Dr. Fletcher got killed. But I got to go with my least favorite. I'm going to go with Claire just because, like I said, she got drug away, didn't scream, put up no fight. Like, yeah, at least make it a little more realistic for me. Rating, listen, James and Anya, they give phenomenal performances, especially McAvoy going in and out of these different characters. I think the movie looks great. It explores some deep things. But I don't know, man. It just doesn't connect with me like that on a super strong level. I think it's, you know, obviously well acted, well made, all that good stuff. But would I ever rewatch it again? Probably not, honestly. So I just gave it a 6.5. Just based on how good it's made and acted.
Sure.
All right. Let me go ahead and knock mine out real quick. Favorite kill for me is Dr. Fletcher because death by bear hug. I mean, shit, we saw Ultimate Warrior almost take out Hulk Hogan the same way. Least favorite kill to me was Marcia because she's the only one that we didn't get anything. Like we just saw her body laying there. As for my rating, this movie, like I said, I saw it when it was brand new. It was just out on Blu-ray DVD. I think we watched it like the week it released and went into it not knowing it was a sequel. And it's my favorite of the three, I think. I mean, Unbreakable's right there with it. So ask me tomorrow, my answer will change.
They're such different movies, man.
They are.
So different.
They are. That's why it was such a mindfuck finding out that it's a sequel and then going back and actually watching Unbreakable because I did that immediately after. It was like the next week I went back and watched Unbreakable. And it's like, man, how is how are they going to tie this all together in the third one? We find out very poorly.
Very badly. Very badly they did.
But this movie is, whether you like the movie or not, I think you have to give it at least 2 full points on your score just because McAvoy. And yeah. That being said, I did like the movie, so I give it an 8.5.
I don't really have a whole lot much else to say, man. I feel like I've talked my ass off this whole time. But I gave Signs a 10. I would give Unbreakable right there a 9, 9.5. This is a tangent, but I read a theory about an Unbreakable, and I don't know if M. Night Shyamalan had these three planned out or if this is just something he like went on a whim and said, okay, well, shit, like this is going to be the sequel, it's going to be whatever. But if you remember in Unbreakable, when Bruce Willis, I keep calling him Bruce Willis because I can't fucking remember his character's name. Whenever Bruce Willis like touches this kid and like sees a vision of like abuse and stuff, they're saying that that is Kevin and his mom and that his dad actually died on the train that started it out at the very beginning. So there is apparently some nice little threaded things that I just don't remember ever even hearing in Glass because I was just so fucking disappointed with that movie. I was bored. I was bored.
It's very boring.
Anyway, I also gave this movie an 8.5, Dustin.
Okay. My favorite kill is Dr. Fletcher. His death via bear hug is awesome. And I think it's pretty rare and unique. We don't see it a ton. And my least favorite is Claire. Very boring, stereotypical. Nothing really happened on screen there. Look, I love the acting. I love the story. I think this is M. Night Shyamalan at his best. You know, these kinds of movies, the twist is good. And I like that we don't – I actually like, Brian, this is where we disagreed a little bit. I like that we didn't get a happy ending. Partly at the time because I was like, all right, we got to get another movie out of this. Boy, I wish we hadn't. I really wish we hadn't get – I mean, this man, Glass really makes me mad because look at the star power, that lineup, the three main actors.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis, Sam Jackson, and fucking James McAvoy. Are you kidding me, man? And the rest of the cast is good too. Just what the hell? Anyway. Long story short, I gave the Sixth Sense a 10, if I'm not mistaken. If I am mistaken, that's pretty standard around here. But I couldn't go full 10, but I will say this movie got really close for me personally. Is it an enjoyable movie? No, but I'm not ranking that off of that. I'm ranking it off of, is it a good movie? So I gave this movie a 9.5.
All right. So that gives us a composite score of 8.25. IMDb has it as 7.3. So we're a little higher than them. Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 78%. And also, I want to say, you mentioned the cast of Glass. Dude, Sarah Paulson's in it.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. It's a great cast.
But God, did they fuck it up.
The writing, man. My man M. Night needs a script doctor sometimes. Anyway.
All right, guys, you got any final thoughts for you? Just shout out our blood donors, and I'll announce my pick for next week.
Yeah, I just want to say, you think M. Night and Rob Zombie could sit down and write a movie together?
No.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Next question.
Hopefully, I just hope M. Night gives him some pointers. Goodness gracious. anywho. Let's shout out our blood donors. Really appreciate y'all. Y'all take a big burden off of us. It means a lot to us that you contribute to us financially. It really helps us out. Christina Tower, final girl donor. Her movie is The Mist, apparently an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Just kidding, brother. just kidding. Love you, brother. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J., Nina, Michelle Mirza, The Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, and Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast. Really appreciate y'all. Means a lot to us.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say, Nico, you mispronounced Joe's last name. If you listen to our Ghostbusters Frozen Empire episode, it's clearly Samsonite. Sorry, Joe.
I was way off.
dude, I was crying laughing. I haven't even seen Ghostbusters, but I listened to y'all's reaction. And
hey, but
and
I whenever, was close. I said Swinton and Swinford.
Sweden,
like, I was
or
really
some
close.
Shit. I don't remember what it was.
As y'all were like going back and forth, like guessing her last name, I was thinking Samsonite, and then you said it, I started dying laughing. But anywho, let me announce my pick for next week, and we'll get out of here. So I'm taking us back to my favorite horror franchise, and it's a franchise that Brian said himself that he wants to knock some more out. We're doing Saw 3 next week, and I almost picked Saw 4, but I was like, nah, we've already done 1 and 2. Let's do 3. Let's just go in order now.
Yes, yes.
Try and get some.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. I'm not even like that particular about that stuff. But even I'm getting that way, Brian. So, yeah, we're doing Saw 3 next week. I'm excited for it. I haven't watched it in a while, so I am excited to revisit it. Appreciate y'all listening, and y'all have
go ahead. It's also my scene-by-scene retirement episode, so just let everybody know. I'll be going out in a blaze of glory, buddy.
Go rest high on that mountain, brother, with that scene-by-scene. Appreciate y'all listening. Y'all have a good one.
Et cetera.
Just want to remind everybody.
Smell!